This podcast on 97.3 The Fan is presented by Hummel Casino. Fun above all else.
Final hour of Ben and Woods on a Friday. We'll have one more show without Woodsy on Monday as he makes his way back from England, and then he should rejoin us on Tuesday morning. Now, Monday we should have a full slate of three games against the Nationals to talk about. Should be a busy day as we get the second half underway. Hopefully tonight, weather permitting, there is some chances of thunderstorms and showers in the Washington, D.C. area.
It didn't look like anything that would be more than like a delay, at least. I think they'll get the game in tonight based on what the radar looks like.
It's good
like.
For everybody but our bottom of the hour guest, Sam Levitt, who might have to tap dance through rain delay theater or an extra long pregame show or a night that ends 4 hours later than he expected on the postgame show. That'll be his cross to bear,
it's
though.
A good chance you hear our interview with Chris Kemp again.
There is a really good chance that Rain Delay Theater will include our Friar Friday interview with Chris Kemp. So, stay tuned. Obviously, if we hear anything, Dave Marcus will probably hook up in about an hour or two to check the lines, and he'll have a direct weather update during a Braden show. And then we'll get the pregame show coming up at 2:45 this afternoon with Sam Levitt. We'll talk to Sammy, see what he did during his holiday break. I saw him post a picture. A slice of pizza with, like, rigatoni on top. So it was pizza and pasta all together. Did you see that picture?
I missed that entirely.
Yeah, it was a regular slice of pizza, but instead of, like, having, like, pepperoni or black olives and peppers on it, it had a whole pasta dish on top of it. It looked like a rigatoni and vodka sauce
on top of the slice of pizza.
Of course it looked good. I mean, you know, pizza, good. Pasta, good.
Well, if I put a ribeye on top of a slice of pizza, I don't know that you'd say it looks good, but ribeye is good.
Baked ZD pizza.
That actually sounds fantastic.
I mean, the carbs obviously are problematic when you're eating both pizza loaded with pasta at the same time. I mean, if Sammy was going to run a marathon, then he's in great shape with the carb loading. We can hear about his all-star break adventures and what Sammy's been up to the last few days when he joins us coming up at the bottom of the hour. We also have some Rick Springfield tickets to give away. First, though, since Sammy's later, let's get to an early edition of the Rindle Report.
And get things started here with our today's edition of the Rindle Report.
Now tuned into the greatest.
Welcome to the Rindle Report. With Paul Rindle.
Hi, Paul.
All right.
Two stories from the world of sports that we haven't gotten to yet.
We'll start off in Major League Baseball.
And one story that you didn't know you needed.
Are you laughing, biatch?
It's the Rindle Report.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
On 97.3 The Fan.
Are you ready to bless the mood? I need some help, please.
That was good.
Can I get a
All righty,
Paul.
Happy Friday, Benjamin. We're almost there. Let's get started. How about get a little basketball, Ben? No Woodsy here. I consider myself a bit of a casual with the NBA. I'll follow some teams. Mostly follow the players, see who's playing well. But I'm not watching it very closely. And every year, I've already said it a couple of times this offseason, the NBA contract situation will always just blow my mind. And I saw yesterday that Damian Lillard has returned to the Portland Trail Blazers. He's signing a 3-year contract. And I go, okay, he's getting up there in age. How old is he? I looked it up. He's 35 years old. He was just waived by the Milwaukee Bucks, who it was not that long ago that they went and acquired him. And it just didn't really work out too well in Milwaukee. So he's returning home to Portland on a 3-year $42 million deal. And I go, yeah, I mean, that guy, he was an MVP caliber player. He was a stud. He's getting a little bit up there in age. 3 years, 42. That doesn't sound too crazy. But he's also getting paid the remaining $113 million.
Double dipping.
By the Bucks.
Very nice.
So he had that fully guaranteed money. They waived him and are still going to pay $113 million?
So the Milwaukee Bucks, they wanted to keep Giannis. They want to go for it. So they needed someone who's healthy. Remember, Lillard's out next season with the Achilles tear.
Right.
So he's going to be rehabbing. So they needed someone to help them now. And they wanted to sign Miles Turner. To do that, they had to waive Dame Lillard and then stretch his contract, which means like pay it out salary cap wise over several years. Now, he still gets all of his money. So, in essence, next year, and remember, he won't play.
He's not even
a
playing
next year. He will make $70 million to not play next year. And then $141 million over the next 2 years ahead of an opt-out. And he has, like, one of the only, along with LeBron, true no-trade clauses now. So they can't do what they did before. The Blazers, when they sent him out, he stays in Portland. Which, I mean, if you're a Portland fan, you must think, this guy loves us so much that he is coming back. I mean, they're not a very good team. He's going to sit out a year so he can play with us for a couple of more years. And they can't trade him at all without his consent. Pretty cool for Dame Lillard. Pretty cool for the Blazers fans. I am so numb to these amounts of money now, though. I saw, you know, TJ Watt is now he got 3 years, like $120 million or something to become the highest paid non-quarterback in the NFL. Every single day you see these deals now that are just I just am numb to it. I don't even pay attention anymore. Like Manny's deal of $350 million is going to look like nothing in a few years because everybody's going to be making that in every sport.
That is just crazy money, man. That is crazy, crazy money. Hey, good for him. If you can get that deal or $70 million and you don't even have to work all year long, that is not bad. That's it for sports. You know, it is like the slowest day of the sports calendar right after the All-Star break. So we'll have some more sports stories for you next week. But I did want to talk about Fleetwood Mac. I think they are one of a very few select number of bands and artists musically where all three of us, you, me, and Woods, are all in.
Yep.
We love Fleetwood Mac. We all agree it is just good music. And if you know anything about Fleetwood Mac, they've had a pretty up and down, tumultuous back and forth history. And so they were in the news yesterday because Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham put out some cryptic Instagram messages, or I think one was on Instagram, one was on X, on social media. So Stevie Nicks posted a graphic, and in cursive it said, "And if you go forward, ... And then Lindsey Buckingham, he posted on his social media account, "I'll meet you there," completing the line from Frozen Love, 1973 song for Fleetwood Mac. And then after that, Mick Fleetwood posted a video of him just hanging out, listening to that same song. So everyone's seeing that and they're going, "All right, what the hell is going on?"
So they could just be having some fun, or this could be an orchestrated tease for a potential reunion tour?
I would say, yeah, I mean, that's what everyone's thinking. I would say it was too coincidental to just be random. Like, they're planning something now. Is it a Vegas residency? Is it a new album and a full tour? Or is Fleetwood Mac back? I don't know. Obviously, you can't have the full group of Fleetwood Mac
Christine
back.
McKee passed
she
away.
Passed away, yeah. I think, in 2022. Mm-hmm. And I did see there was a quote from Stevie Nicks after that, after her passing, and, you know, they were as close as can be. She said, there's no chance. There will never be a Fleetwood Mac reunion. You cannot do it without her. And now everyone's left to go, well, what the hell was that yesterday on social media?
I mean, you could. Stevie Nicks has, you know, most of the really cool songs are Stevie's voice. Just be honest. Now, Steve in the chat says,
like, you can't do Ben and Woods without Woods. And Ben's like, well, I mean, you can. You could.
It would be different, but it's not that it would be bad. Steve says he still has a crush on Stevie Nicks after all of these years. I am not the music savant. I was never, you know, as into it as certainly as Woods was.
Sure.
So I never really saw what these people look like. I heard the music on the radio, but I had no idea. Do you feel like you can ever have a crush on a voice, though?
Oh,
because
yeah,
I had two. Stevie Nicks was one of them, and Cyndi Lauper was the other. Like, I loved that voice. Like, that voice just spoke to me, mm-hmm. as did Stevie Nicks's raspy, like, oh, that is doing something for me.
Yeah? No, are you kidding me? She's unbelievable. She's one of the elite voices of all time.
Right.
Oh, of all time.
Yeah.
So we'll have to wait and see. I don't know. Maybe Woodsy will have some thoughts when he gets back. And
maybe I'll have a trip for my 50th birthday to go see Fleetwood Mac when they do a show in Melbourne, Australia or something.
There you go. I know Stevie Nicks is like working, still singing. She's on tour, I think, right now, doing her own solo thing. So no idea what's going to happen there. But I know a lot of people will be at least paying attention to see if the band gets back together. And then we can wrap it up with some television news. I think I was surprised yesterday to see that The Late Show with Stephen Colbert has been canceled. Stephen Colbert took to the air yesterday and during his monologue said, look, I just got news either the night before or earlier that day even. And he broke the news that after next season, CBS and their Paramount parent company, they have decided to cancel the show and it will end next May. And I thought the interesting thing, there's a lot of conspiracy theories going around out there. I just thought it was interesting that he did make it very clear, I'm not being replaced. In fact, I wish I was being replaced, because that happens all the time in this business. He said, they're getting rid of The Late Show. They don't think this is important enough moving forward in broadcast television, and they can spend that money elsewhere. I think he said he's got over 200 people that work on his show, all the production and everything that goes into it. They are going to try to cut costs, and they are getting rid of The Late Night Show. And I don't know. I mean, I saw like Jimmy Kimmel on ABC. He was pissed off that this was happening to somebody else in his field. So I don't know if other networks are going to follow suit, if this is a trend that we're going in, but I did think it was significant
news. I think what hit me is that this is Letterman's show that they're canceling.
Yeah.
Essentially, they're bringing an end to an era, a late night era. And I like Stephen Colbert. I wanted to be kind of mad, but then I realized you never, ever, ever watch it. Never. So I can't really be that upset if I'm not actively supporting him and watching his program. Maybe that's why they felt like it was just time to move on. Mm-hmm. And, there is a time for everything.
But, I mean, late night shows been going on forever.
They have.
As long as television's been around. We've had late night television.
Television's different now. I mean, how many people actually, stay through for the late night show anymore? Or are they not? I mean, I hope they do. I'm on the 11 o'clock news. So, that's a bit of a, it's a bit of a dying breed, though, certainly. And, I'm not shocked that they're moving on. Then again, I'd be sad. I mean, if they got rid of Jimmy Kimmel and got rid of Jimmy Fallon and it was all done, yeah, and there was no more late night shows, I'd like to think there's still some sort of place for that in television. But they're always competing against each other. There's only so many eyeballs at 11:30 at night. And they've got three shows that are expensive with expensive hosts that are all competing each other for the same ad dollars.
Right.
At some point, someone was going to say, all right, this is silly. We got to pull the plug on at least one of these shows.
So I don't know what Stephen Colbert is going to do. I mean, he's still young enough to continue to keep working if he wants to. And, people are like, oh, maybe he goes to Netflix or takes his show, over the air somewhere else. I mean, he'll have options to catch on, whether it is a streaming platform, whether it's YouTube, whatever. Whether it's a podcast even, but wouldn't that say like, no, there's still a market for him and his style of show.
Yeah. Where did Conan O'Brien go?
He's doing his podcast and he's doing shows with like HBO Max now, but he's not doing like the nightly talk
shows
anymore.
He doesn't have a show anymore.
Yeah. He left broadcast network. When all that happened with NBC, and then he went over to TBS.
Oh, that's right.
And then he did that for a long time. Yeah. And then now he's doing the podcast. He does like a travel show on HBO. But yeah, we'll see what happens in the late night television world if other networks start to follow suit.
It's not the same though. Like back in the day, Carson, Leno, Letterman. I mean, they were such the people who defined culture in the country.
Yeah,
like who their guests were, what they were talking
about.
Like
if something major happened that day or the day before, you had to like see what was going to be said about it on
TV. Like
even
in the movies, like in the 80s or 90s, if they would have like a TV clip, oh yeah, Leno's talking about it during his monologue, and they'd put that into like part of the movies and stuff. And I don't feel like it's the same nowadays in terms of how important it is in our cultural collectiveness, yeah, that the late night shows are just not what they used to be.
Who's your favorite late night
of
host?
All time?
Yeah. I don't think there's a wrong answer.
I know.
Who was your guy?
It's probably Johnny Carson, but I know that's a really old reference. I did watch David Letterman a ton in college, and the top 10 list every night. I love lists. You know me. I love lists.
See, like Letterman's the guy. Like Letterman, I think he's probably the GOAT. Like Letterman was amazing, and I don't even remember how it all went down with his time at what was it, CBS.
Yeah.
But like he still has, he has a successful Netflix show now. It's like there's clearly still, there was still a market for David Letterman fans.
Oh, absolutely.
And CBS just said,
and
that's
not
for us. And there
will be for Stephen Colbert fans as well going forward.
Yeah. I was a Conan guy, and that's a product of my age, I'm sure. But I think Letterman still gets the number one slot for me all time. I like Kimmel. Fallon, I don't watch Fallon. I see some clips, and they're like, oh, that's pretty good. Or he'll do a funny game or something. I'm like, that's okay, but he's not my
I think if I had to hang out with one of them, I'd probably be the most comfortable with Kimmel.
Yeah, like, I could see that.
Just like sports guy, kind of gets it, sort of. I think I'd be the most intimidated by Letterman. Like, I think he could make it awkward, like Woods makes it awkward.
Yes.
That might be difficult. Like, you just never know what he's going to say or do next.
Yeah, he's you never know. Who would I want to hang out with? Conan. I love Conan.
Conan, yeah.
He's
Andy,
so funny.
Do you like Andy too? Andy Richter?
I'm okay on Andy. Oh, okay. I'm one way or the other. He's fine.
All right. Thank you, Paulie,
You're
for the Rindle Report. We still have some tickets to give away to Rick Springfield coming up. Just a reminder, you can grab your clubs and tee off for a great cause. Join us for the 4th Annual Salute to Heroes Charity Golf Tournament Monday, July 28th. That's a week from this coming Monday at the stunning Loma Santa Fe Country Club. Enjoy a day of golf, food, prizes, and camaraderie, all to honor our local heroes and support veterans programs. You can register for your slot today at sandiegosocialleagues.org. That's July 28th, Loma Santa Fe, and we're going to be out there broadcasting live, interviewing some of the participants, including former Padre Greg Vaughn, among others, many others who are going to be out there a week from Monday. All right, we'll come back. We got tickets to give away. We got a Padres game to get ready for, a second half of the season that is upon us. And in-season Sammy Levitt's going to join us. So busy last 40 minutes or so here of Ben and Woods on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. All right, Padres have 66 games remaining this season.
Man.
Doesn't feel like enough somehow. We're already through 96 games.
Happens fast, man.
It really happens fast.
Like, before we know it, we'll be late September. What's it going to be like?
Padres have 52 wins. So, if they won half of those 66 games, 33, that would get them to 85. Don't feel like that's quite enough to get to the playoffs. But you don't need to do what you did last year and finish 25 games above 500, 24 games above 500 either. I think if the Padres win, and certainly if they win 37 probably out of their last 66, that's 89. You feel pretty good about getting to that. Let's say 90, 38 and 28. That'll be 10 games above 500. Better than they played in the first half of the season.
But pretty much the same clip that they've played to this point.
A little
point,
bit better. Because
just slightly better.
It'd be two more games above 500 and slightly fewer games. Sure. So it would be a better, certainly winning percentage than the first half of the season.
But, I mean, they don't got to win 9 out of 10. Like,
yeah,
they don't have to go
the
crazy.
Bar is not set extremely high by how the Padres have played so far this year.
But I do think, 90 is probably going to be the number right around there.
Thought Chris Ella made an interesting point during the roundtable yesterday. And he was pointing out that, you know, the Padres, when they've been making the playoffs, generally they've been going for the wild card. First wild card spot has earned them a home game, home playoff series, wild card series against the Braves last year, against the Cardinals back in the pandemic year. So, you know, that's ideal. You know, you'd rather play those games at home. Padres have played well at home for the most part in the postseason. But if you get that top wild card spot or even the second wild card spot and you win in the first round, then you advance to face the number one seed, which he was presuming will likely be the Los Angeles Dodgers. They, of course, do have the best record in the National League. It's not by a ton. They're only a half game ahead of the Chicago Cubs. So there's no guarantee the Dodgers will have the best record, but you probably safe assumption that they've got the best chance to finish with the best record. So Chris was saying there's no harm in finishing sixth, and then you face the worst of the division winners. So it would probably either be the probably be the Phillies or the Mets in the wild card series. Whoever wins that division, they have the worst record right now. That could change, but that would be the logical assumption. And then you would face the winner of the other series, the 2-3 series in the next round, or the two seed, the Cubs maybe. I don't know, though, that you
do you
want to place the Dodgers in a longer series,
yeah,
or would you rather face them in a shorter series?
I think you have a better chance of beating them in a five-game series. I think, and that's not just the Dodgers. I think anytime you're playing a better team,
right.
I feel like the better team, you give them more chances, like they're going to prevail. So I think that's, I mean, we've seen it. We saw it in 2022, had them on the ropes in 2024 in those five-game series.
If it was a three-game series last year, the Padres advanced. But because it was five, the Dodgers came back and won the last two. Yeah, generally, the shorter the series, better for the underdog.
Yeah.
That's why they play 162 game, you know, baseball season. They want the cream to rise to the crop. So the more games that are played, the better it is for the team that is considered the favorite in a series like that.
Yeah, I didn't really think about it too much. I remember Chris saying that on the roundtable, and I think I would push back on it. I think, look, the road to the World Series, like to win the pennant, you're gonna have to beat LA. You're gonna have to beat them. That's just.
Likely.
You expect it.
Yeah.
Most
likely. I mean, someone else could knock them off.
Yeah, it's possible. But in general, the road to the World Series is going to go through LA, whether that's in the NLDS or in the NLCS. I think I would want to just get them right away in the five-game, the shorter series over the seven-game series, 100%.
Now, one thing working in the Padres' favor is that, according to winning percentage, they have the fourth easiest schedule remaining in Major League Baseball the rest of the year over those 66 games. So given that knowledge, you'd certainly expect a team with as much talent as the Padres against an easy schedule to have a winning record. Like, 38 wins, what gets them to 90 certainly doesn't seem out of the question against an easier schedule. Now, there are pockets where the schedule gets tough, especially in August, a two-week stretch from August 11th through the 24th, when they'll face nobody but the Giants and the Dodgers. It goes Giants, Dodgers, both road and home for both teams. And that will wrap up both season series. So my guess is, as much as Mike Schilt is a one-game-at-a-time guy, the Padres will have to think about that stretch as they're approaching it. What can they do to make sure they maximize their pitching matchups, have their bullpen as fresh as possible, because those are the most important games the rest of the season. That two-week stretch will determine whether you're a division contender, a wild card favorite, a wild card underdog, or perhaps playing your way almost out of the race over those 2 weeks. More than likely, the Padres, tread water during those games, and they're still in good shape in the wild card race. But you have a really good 2 weeks there. You could be playing for a division title. You have a really bad 2 weeks. You may bury yourself to your part of your schedule in September. So definitely it's still a ways off, almost a month, but keeping an eye out for that two-week stretch where it's all Giants and Dodgers from August 11th through August 24th.
Yeah, it's just the schedule. Baseball always works itself out. It always balances itself out. Yes, everyone can look at the September and be like, hey, there's a lot of winnable games. And it's like, yeah, it's just a matter of, will you be padding a potentially really good record if you can take care of business in August? Or is August going to suck so bad that you're using those, you get like, yes, thankfully you have those winnable games in September, but is it to be climbing out of the cellar? We don't know. August is going to be just so crucial. I think I remember when we looked at the calendar, at the schedule before the season, we knew that was going to be pivotal.
Well, it all starts today against the team that has the second worst record in the National League. Only the Rockies
gotta
have
get
a
off
worse
to a
record
good start
than the Washington Nationals. And while you did take two out of three from the Nationals at Petco Park, it wasn't an easy series by any stretch of the imagination. Remember, C.J. Abrams and James Wood had theirs on the first day, and we had the entire next couple of days to discuss the Juan Soto trade and the fallout. Padres came back to win this series. They don't want to have to come back and win this one. Get the first one today. We will talk about it with Sam Levitt, in-season Sammy, back on his pre- and post-game show duties. He's going to join us coming up in our final segment. Before we do that, though, Paulie and I are going to give away one more pair of tickets to Rick Springfield coming to Front Wave Arena just around the corner, a chance to win your your tickets to I Want My 80s Tour on August 3rd. Tickets are on sale now at AXS.com, but you can win them here on 97.3 The Fan by being the fourth caller at 833-288-0973. Good luck. 833-288-0973 for the Rick Springfield tickets. Sam Levitt coming up next here on 97.3 The Fan. Quick update on the golf for those who do partake. For those who don't, just indulge me for a moment. Open Championship, second round at Royal Portrush. Brian Harman continues to lead, the lefty and former champion golfer of the year. 8 under. He was 6 under today after a 65. He is tied with Haotong Lee. But that sound you hear is Scottie Scheffler rocketing up the leaderboard. He has birdied 4 of his first 7 holes. He is 7 under. He is 1 shot back. And if they're being very honest, there's a lot of people in the field right now who are thinking, you know, second place is not that bad. Because if Scottie Scheffler plays like he's capable, he is going to be the big favorite going into this weekend. There are some other big names, though, on the leaderboard, including Rory McIlroy, who finished the day at 3 under. He's just hoping Scottie doesn't run away and hide too far from the leaders today. Probably hoping for wind and rain in the afternoon in Northern Ireland to keep the scores from getting too low. But there's your update from the Open Championship. Paulie's going to get Sam Levitt on the line. We got in-season Sammy joining us after our final check of traffic.
I keep calling Sam as he calls me.
You. I hate when that
happens.
And
so then I hang up, and then he hangs up when
and
I try to pick him up.
You don't know who's supposed to do the call.
Now he's calling me again, so we'll get him back here.
All right, we will get Sammy on right after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. Back to the coal mines for one Sam Levitt after his short all-star break as he returns for Padres pre- and post-game show duties later today and kind enough to join us this morning here on 97.3 The Fan. Sammy, how was your all-star break?
All-star break was great. Spent some time in New York, which is always nice. See my parents and spend a little time back on the East Coast. And I know everybody was very interested in my my ZD flight, so we can talk about that if
I
you would like.
I was very interested. It was pizza topped with pasta and then like breadsticks and a donut on top of it. That's not very traditional New York, right? I mean, in New York, you're just supposed to get a slice, a little pepperoni, or sausage.
Yeah, I would disagree. So I posted that photo and a lot of people had questions. And I feel like it's maybe not super common, but I feel like most New York pizzerias offer some type of ziti slice. Now, that was a very unique slice because that was A, rigatoni, and B, you were right, Ben. You were on it. It was a vodka sauce.
Oh, vodka sauce. I love vodka sauce. I was intrigued.
I haven't seen a ton of in my life, but it was really good. Now, typically, you'll get what is called a ziti slice, which is ziti on top of the pizza. There's usually ricotta cheese in there, and it's kind of almost like, and you said, you were right, you were on it, that it's kind of like a big ziti on top of the pizza. I will tell you, that is very, very common. That's a common slice. That's a common pie in a pizzeria, to me. Maybe not every pizzeria would have it, but I do think it's pretty common, and it's one of my favorites. And I don't usually go to I went to a place called Vincent's, which is in Lynbrook, New York, which is near where I grew up. I don't typically go there. I typically go to a place called Pizza Place, which is in Hewlett, New York, which is even closer to where I grew up. And they don't offer that rigatoni vodka slice. They just have the ziti slice, but it's really good. I think it's more common than people realize.
All right. Well, I haven't spent enough time in New York then. I Need Money in our chat says Brooklyn Boys Pizza in Oceanside has a baked ziti pizza, and it's banging. So next time I'm up playing the goat, I guess I have to find Brooklyn Boys and try my first ever slice of pasta on top of pizza, which does seem like a bit of an indulgence. All right, are you ready to get back to work here today? Sammy, I'm sure you're keeping your eyes on the weather report. Unfortunately, there is some threat of rain and thunderstorm, so you may have to tap dance your way right into your first rain delay theater of the second half on game one.
Yeah, I know. I saw the radar, and the good news is it's a Friday, you know, drive time, so I'll probably have no shortage of calls if we got to go that way. We got some stuff to replay if we've got to go to pre-recorded stuff. So we'll be okay. We'll keep everybody entertained, even if there's some weather. That's part of the deal this time of year.
Missed you on the round table yesterday. We got through it, though. We talked a little bit about the trade deadline, obviously, coming up. Robert Suarez's name was mentioned, and it was kind of embarrassing because we all felt like we were okay trading him, and then we felt bad about it later. Like, he's been so good for the Padres that you don't want to, you know, detract from one of your great strengths. But how do you see this playing out, Sammy, as A.J. Preller goes through his options here over the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question. And you know, look, I appreciate all the trade deadline talk. Quite frankly, I think some of it's exhausting because I feel like we've been talking about the trade deadline for 2 months now. And that's not just Padres related. That's across baseball. You can listen to any show, any podcast, whatever you listen to get your baseball fix. And I feel like this has now become something where we talk about the trade deadline for months, when in reality, most things happen that week in the lead up to the actual deadline. With that said, look, Ben, I think they're in a fascinating situation as far as assuming that AJ is going to do something or multiple things to improve this team. I think the first question is that on the margins? Is that fixing what are obvious holes with at least other options you can plug in? Or is that a bigger swing? And do any of those two options involve, you know, any of your top prospects in DeVries and Salas? I don't expect them to trade DeVries. I'm less sure about Salas. What do the Padres have to trade from a prospect standpoint? I think, you know, it's very clear the system isn't in the place where it was last year when they had the ability to make all those deals, starting with the Cease deal, into the Arise deal, into the deals they made at the deadline. And then I think to your point about Suarez, could you subtract but make your team better? Look, I do think the Suarez part of it, or trading from a strength, is a bit of a tough sell to me because the bullpen's been so good. And I don't necessarily want to see them, you know, take anything from that bullpen, which has been a real strength, and subtract from it. It would seem counterintuitive to me, but could you make the argument that you have enough in that pen to get by and for it to still be really good and use a piece like a Suarez and flip that into filling other needs? Sure. Look, you know, we know AJ's as creative as they come, so I wouldn't put it past them, but I think it's a fascinating deadline because I'm still not totally sure what they have to trade from a prospect standpoint, how aggressive he'll be if there is a big swing in there. And obviously he is somebody who can get creative, and you would imagine part of that creativity could be trading from a position of strength. And obviously that bullpen is a position of strength. So I guess, you know, the easy answer is nothing would surprise me, even if it was somebody like a Suarez who can opt out at the end of the year, you know, moving out in order to make your team better in other spots.
I think one thing, Sam, you have to look at the trade deadline as well is not just where your team stands. The Padres are clearly good enough to add on. They're 8 games above 500. They've got clear holes that are not going to be that tough to address. I fully expect AJ to do something and add. You know, there's a wide range of what that could be, but I think he's going to add. But the other thing you look at is, what is the competition that you're facing? And going into this year, I wasn't sure that the Padres really could afford to push all in, knowing the Dodgers, no matter what you do, are probably going to be so far ahead of you. But through this first half of the season, the Dodgers haven't. And quite frankly, nobody else has been, you know, heads and tails better, you know, head and shoulders above the Padres. Just saw them compete with the Phillies very well. They split with the Cubs, who are the good team. Yeah, the Dodgers got them 5 out of 7, but those games were all very close. Now, maybe the Dodgers look different in a couple of months, but right now, you make the argument that there's no team that is certainly way better than the San Diego Padres at the moment. And if you make some moves to help your team, you could push yourself right there to the very top, or right there close to the very top of the National League.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, look, even with some of the struggles, and I will contend that the Padres need to play better. I think from an offensive standpoint, it's imperative that they play better. They simply score more runs, as simple as that sounds, because I do think the way they've played is kind of unsustainable. And I know there's all kinds of one run and two run game numbers, and you can really dig into the bullpen and how many close games and how few big leads the Padres have had for those guys to work with. To me, when I look at the second half, I look at, number one, the Padres just have to play better offensive baseball, top to bottom, whatever that means. If that means relying more on the stars, if that means getting more out of the bottom of the lineup, if that means trading for pieces that can help your lineup and make it a deeper lineup, whatever that means. To me, that's item number one. But I'm with you, Ben. There is nobody else in this National League that really, really scares me from a wild card standpoint. I mean, you look at the teams that are behind the Padres right now. The Giants don't scare me a ton. Cardinals don't scare me. The Reds don't scare me. Now, those teams could get hot and steal a wild card spot, but there's nobody there. And I'd put the Brewers in that conversation as well. Quite frankly, I don't know how great the Mets are or not. They had a great start to the season, and they've cooled off significantly. So I'm totally there with you. I still think this team is so capable of bursting to a top wild card spot, of playing really great baseball and still being a team that nobody wants to see come October. So to me, that is part of the equation. There's nobody that I look at in this mix, much like it sounds like you do, that really scares me, that makes me think, uh-oh, if the Padres, you know, don't play out of their minds for the next 2 months, they could be on the outside looking in. To your point, I do make a whole lot to, A, improve this team enough, or I just should say, to improve this team enough to get a wild card spot, you know, based on the teams around them. So I'm with you. I don't think the fixes need to be huge. I don't think the moves need to be huge, but I do think they need to play better overall baseball, and offensively especially, I think would go a long way.
Talking to Sam Levitt, and as we wrap up, there's the one factor that we've brought up many times, the Mike Schilt factor.
Yeah.
His teams have always played really well in the second half, and you know, he says that that's what he wants, that he wants his teams to keep playing better as the season goes on. I don't know that he has a magic wand or makes a big speech or does anything differently in the second half. I'm not sure why that's been the case. I do feel like there's a pretty large sample size with, you know, 3 years at the Cardinals, now one with the Padres, where it's been true like every single year that he always finds a way to get to 90 wins. He always finds a way to have his teams finishing strong at the end. You know, any thoughts on why that happens and whether it'll happen again here for the Padres?
Well, I think, number one, you have to have a good team, which I think he had in St. Louis, and I think he had it last year with the Padres. I don't know that team, that this team this year is quite the same as last year. I know you guys had that conversation. I heard that part of the roundtable comparing last year to this year. I don't know that they have the same roster and the same team to get quite as hot as they did a year ago. But from the Mike Schilt standpoint, I'll give Schulte this, and I do think this plays a part in why his teams have been so good in the second half. Mike is extremely consistent in what he says and how he acts, in his positivity. I do think what you see is what you get, the way he talks to you guys and talks to the media. Not that it's exactly the same behind closed doors, but I do think that really is Mike Schilt. And I do think that plays a role in why his teams have been able, and last year was a great example, to, you know, stay above water in the first half and be cohesive enough to play really good baseball in the second half. And to your point, the proof is in the pudding. So, look, I would expect this team is going to play well in the second half. Is it going to be as easy, as great as things were a year ago? I think that's really hard to do, and I don't think they're the same team. But, I do give Mike credit for that. I think he keeps things very, very consistent and very, very positive, and does a really good job in keeping his groups together, which I do think is part of what you see in the way his teams play as the season goes on and as you get later. And I think it also helps when you have good players and good teams. And obviously, I think he had that in St. Louis, too. But I do give Mike credit for it as well. I think he does a really good job holding his groups together. And hopefully, you know, that rings true again in this second half.
Well, I can promise you at least one more hour of Sam Levitt at 2:45 for our EcoWater SoCal pregame show. If everything goes well, we'll get one additional hour on the postgame show. If things go haywire because of the weather, we could have a variable amount of Sammy this afternoon. And just stay tuned for more information from 97.3 The Fan on that. But, Sammy, it's good to have you back. Let's have a strong second half of the season, and I'll be listening this afternoon.
All right. Thanks, guys. Yes, rain or shine, we got you. Appreciate it.
And we got the lowdown on baked ZD pizza. ZD on pizza, which now I do want to try. Although
I got to at least try it.
I don't want to get addicted to it because obviously that's combining two indulgences into one.
Yeah.
And now I see there's lasagna on pizza as well, which could
hell?
Be like absolutely fatal if I learn about that as well. So thanks for that tip. All right, that's it.
How did you
us?
Gain all the weight?
Baked ZD pizza.
Baked ZD pizza. Very
that's
quickly.
Exactly how.
Very quickly, Larry. Thank you. All right, Woodsy back on Tuesday. We'll be back on Monday to wrap up the entire weekend against the Washington Nationals. Braden, Italian Paul coming up next for Paul Reindl. I'm Ben Higgins. Have a great weekend from all of us here at San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. So long, everybody.